This is Roll Right Radio. I'm New York Mike, and today we are blessed with the presence of my wonderful co-host in life, Miss Petrina Herman, Lady P. How you doing?
Shelby.
How you doing, Lady
Good.
P. Shelby? How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me as your first guest.
No, wait. You're the best guest I've ever had.
I'm your only first. I'm the first guest.
You are the best guest we've ever had on Roll Right Radio.
I'm also your first guest.
Well, why do you keep saying that?
Because that's the fun part.
It's not material. No, it doesn't matter if you're the first or you're the second or 15th. You're still the best guest I've ever had.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. See, you have to be able to accept
a compliment. Okay.
You can't be. You're always looking the gift horse in the mouth. Well, yeah, but I didn't. No, accept it. You're the best guest we've ever had.
Okay.
Doesn't
Thank
feel
you.
Good?
Feels great.
Damn right.
Glad to be here. Glad to share the microphone with you.
There you go.
If you let me.
Yeah. What do you have to say? Say something like, go ahead.
Well, why don't we share about our event this morning, how amazing that was.
It was a good event. And thanks to Congressman Daryl Issa and John Franklin, his chief of staff, who's running for mayor of Escondido. And, you know, Escondido? No. He's running for mayor somewhere.
Very nice. The fact that they asked you to speak at this amazing Vietnam veteran, honoring the veterans.
They actually asked me to do the invocation. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Right. You know. Especially for you, being a Jew.
And that's why I told them, well, I hope you people appreciate you got an honorary rabbi here today.
Right.
That was cool.
That was cool. It was amazing. It was beautiful. You made a little bit of humor, which was appropriate at the moment. You made us all cry. You made us laugh. You made us feel really... Just, it was beautiful on so many levels.
I had a good time doing it. And by the way, it was special to look over the room. And I do a lot of speaking. Obviously, also to Vietnam vets at the wall. I'm at the wall every year. And I'm a speaker most times. I was the speaker at the main event on Memorial Day in 98, the 15th anniversary of the wall. I spoke a lot. But there was something about today. I looked over the room. And I saw all these Vietnam vets. And the Vietnam vets I talked to in places like Washington, D.C., they've been around. I figured they haven't been to too many feel-good events because as Vietnam vets, there wasn't much to feel good about when we got home. And it just seemed to me for a moment there that there were a lot of people in that room that might not have experienced the camaraderie of other veterans.
And it was beautiful.
Bring that to them. I think I did. So that was my goal. I wanted to bring that to them, make them feel a part of something that could make them feel good about having been a Vietnam vet.
It was great. I'm glad I blew off my chiropractor appointment and decided to stay for the whole thing because it was extremely touching. I was crying like a little 2-year-old in the front row to see every single person come up and Daryl pin the pin of Vietnam veteran on them,
individually,
each individual person,
and then shook their hand.
Got a picture taken.
It was just well done.
It was beautiful, and I'm glad I was able to be there and be a part of it.
It was well done.
But the best part was being able to see. Are you cutting me off again?
No, I'm just
the best part was being able to see my veteran get pinned.
Oh, I love that, and it was fabulous that you were there, and I appreciate it. It was something, other more interesting things. You look at, when you get to a certain age in life, it's like I said to everybody out there, we're getting ready to move on to the next world or wherever we're headed. We're on the way out. You know, when I was a younger guy and I went to the wall in the 80s and we saw the World War II vets, and then when they dedicated the World War II monument, and we go, whoa, they're not going to be around much longer.
Honestly.
Well, now we're in that space.
Right.
But it was interesting that you get to a certain age and you're kind of like, hey, what are you going to give me now? What is this? I've already gotten the brass ring. I've been to the rodeo a dozen times. Been there, done that, more. And yet, everybody in that room was like, wow, this is great. They're getting a little pin. And
they felt appreciated, which they don't get appreciated as much as they should.
And they did, and they came up holding hands with their wives.
It was beautiful. They brought some of their some of the people who were there because their loved ones had passed in the war.
There were people there with pictures.
And they had pictures, and they came up, and they got their pin for their loved one that had died in the line of duty.
Yeah.
And it was very emotional.
There were Gold Star families.
Well, I'm sure you're going to...
The families that the veteran had passed.
Right. Well, I'm sure you're going to be talking about all this during your next podcast. I'm sure you'll talk more in detail, but I just wanted to jump on here.
I don't know if I could do any better by myself than you and me.
That's kind of fun.
Well, because you see it from a different point of view, a woman's perspective, softer and more, just a nicer way of looking at things.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's true. So what, you're telling me to cut off? You want me to stop?
Yep.
That's it? We're done?
We're done.
We're done?
Yeah, this
the
is...
The interview's
this,
over?
Yeah, we were
you
just testing our mics.
You don't want to be my best guest any longer?
I
this
will.
Is it?
Anytime you need me, baby, I'm here.
I always need you.
I love you.
I love you more.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, this is New York Mike, and this is Roll Right Radio. And, yep, I am getting ready to leave for Sturgis. I wanted to get a podcast in before I hit the road. So, you might have heard the intro, the first 7 minutes, or you might have heard a little bit more. But I want to tell you, it was my honor to speak at the Vietnam Veterans Award ceremony. There was a pin made for Vietnam veterans. Whether you served in country, in Vietnam, or just served in the military during that time, Congress approved a pin. I guess it was back in 2012. I'm trying to remember what the Congressman Darrell Issa, who put together these pin ceremonies for the last, he did it on Monday in Temecula, today in Escondido, and tomorrow in El Cajon. For those of you who don't know, those are towns, small cities in and around the county of San Diego. And I had heard about it, and then Darrell asked me to speak, and I did. And it truly was an honor. And I was so impressed. It's a small pin. It just says Vietnam Veterans on a little pin with an eagle in the middle of it. So you get a pin. Well, it adds to the pins on your vest or your lapel or wherever it is. But what he did, he created these events, and Vietnam veterans showed up. He invited us all. People had pre-registered so that their names were already there to get this pin. Knowing Darrell Issa as much as I do, and he's been my congressman for many years now, and he's a veteran. Hopefully, these pin ceremonies might be going on all over the country. I really don't know, but I know what's being done here. So I went up to Temecula. Yesterday was the first one, 10 o'clock, and I got there a little early, and walked around, and as the room filled up, I was so impressed by how many people showed up to these events. And I look at the room full of veterans. I couldn't help but think back to when I went to the wall in the 80s, and we were all younger. We were all in our 30s, 40s. And today I look around the room, and we're all in our late 60s and 70s, and I think about the World War II vets that I used to see at that time, and I remember when they dedicated the World War II Memorial. And it's never too late to honor heroes, and it's never too late, certainly, for these heroes and for these soldiers who either went to Vietnam or were in during Vietnam. We were all treated the same way by the American public. We were all treated the same way as baby killers, whether we were there or not. If you were a veteran, if you were in the military at that time, whether you were drafted or whatever, you were still treated like some sort of a criminal. So it's nice to be recognized. And they asked me to give the invocation. So given the invocation, of course, I had to let everybody know I'm a rabbi for a day. Honorary rabbi if I'm given an invocation. So it was kind of fun in that way, but it was also serious. There's an opportunity for me to say once again, as I have been doing now for all these years, from when I went to anti-war rallies after I came back in 1966, and I'd go to these anti-war rallies, I said today how, people say I speak pretty well at public forums. I said, well, you know what? When I came back from Vietnam, and I was a kid. I was 22 years old, 21 actually. And I went to these rallies. I was like, what's going on here? And I saw all these hippies, long-haired hippies with beads and banjos and guitars and just tons of these guys and gals. And I fought my way to the microphone. I grabbed the microphone and I had to push my way through. I certainly wasn't on their list of talkers. And I grabbed the microphone. I'm a Vietnam vet. I just got back from Vietnam 3 months ago, 6 months ago, a year ago. And I said, you're killing us. We're just doing a job. We're trying to free these people. We're trying to save these South Vietnamese people, the most wonderful people, salt of the earth, peace-loving people. And as I couldn't get many words out, because not only did I have to fight for the microphone, I had to fight to keep it and try to get my message across to these people. And by the way, as time went on, and after I did 2, 3, 4, 5 of these events, I got a little bit better. And as much as, you know, you get up there the first time, it was obviously a hostile environment, but you learn how to navigate even within just a couple of minutes. So I went from maybe 45 seconds or a minute. That first time was rough. But then I was able to finesse a little more time by not being as aggressive and volatile in the beginning and saying, you got to stop this. I don't remember my first words, but it was certainly like, you're killing us. And to a better way of introducing it and saying to them, and I don't remember exactly what I did, but I know I got better. Because after a while, I was able to stand up there for 2, 3 minutes. And that was pretty good. I don't think I ever lasted much longer than that. But I wanted to let these veterans know, here I was doing something I've been doing since, like I said, 66. And so I was able to get that point across and let them know my message. We didn't lose the war. We didn't lose a battle. We didn't lose a gunfight in Vietnam. That war was lost back here. The politicians, the American people gave it away. And what they did to the South Vietnamese people, what they did to those people who fought with us, who believed in us, who put their lives on the line, and the way they've had to live since we just left and abandoned them, it's not a life that I wish on any one of you, on any American out there. It's not. But we also walked away and abandoned them, and we don't want to let history repeat itself. We're walking away from Afghanistan. And by the way, after 20 years, it's time to walk away. But it was time to walk away from Vietnam. But we made a commitment. In 72, we said we're going to continue to support them. And in 75, President Ford tried to live up to our promises, and Congress wouldn't let him. And so many of those Vietnamese people died. They perished, leaving Vietnam on boats and rafts and any way they could. They drowned. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, and the rest have lived in virtually a state of indentured servant, working for the state, working for pennies a day, peanuts, nothing, and doing what they're told to do, not what they want to do. This is their lives. But as we leave Afghanistan, at the very least we can do is we, Vietnam vets and all Americans, can lead the way. We've led the way for so much in America. And that was my message, and it is my message, to let these people know when we came back, we made a promise. We would never let those who served in our military be treated the way we were. We've made it our business as veterans to make sure that every veteran is treated with honor and dignity and appreciated for the sacrifices, for what they were willing to put on the line, their homes, their families, everything to defend this country, to live through a war zone. How many sacrificed life and limb, and how many have carried the burden for their entire lives? To ease that burden, to know that our mission was honorable, what we tried to do was the right thing, and coming back to make sure no one was ever treated that way again, to bring up the issue of the POWs and the MIAs, because no one had before. Sure, we brought it up for the Vietnam vet, but we also brought it up for the Korean War veterans. There were 3,000 or so POWs and MIAs in Vietnam when we left, but there was over 8,000 in Korea and over 80,000 unaccounted for missing in action, POW unaccounted for, 80,000 in World War II. And we brought that issue front and center. So when you see that flag, that black flag with the white image of an American POW, and you know what that image, when you see that guard stand behind him or her, when you see what that signifies, we brought that to the surface. So when we say, never leave an American behind, and we mean it, and this is the legacy of the Vietnam vet. And today, we have a job to do to make sure with every other American, to make sure that every American understands how important it is to treat those in Afghanistan who helped us, the thousands of translators and all the others that help, make sure that we do not leave them behind, that we make sure every one of them gets a chance to get to the United States or to some place in this world where they'll be safe from the Taliban, safe from Al-Qaeda, safe from the enemies who are so vindictive. That's our job, and that's my message to let them know. It's also my message to let them know, and I told the story, and I'll tell it here. I was at the Vietnam Veterans Wall at the dedication, and I've been back every year on Memorial Day. I ride my motorcycle from San Diego to Washington, D.C. every year. This was my 38th year of Memorial Day. And I've been there for Veterans Days as well. And for the last 14 years, my close friend, Robert Patrick, who was the T-1000 in The Terminator, Robert Patrick, you've seen him in movies, all over, TV series. Robert Patrick has ridden with me because he goes USO tours to Afghanistan, Iraq, and Africa, and anywhere in Southeast Asia or anywhere they send him. And for the last 14 years, he's been riding with me to Washington, D.C., to the wall, to Rolling Thunder, which is now Rolling to Remember. The AMVETs have taken up this ride, this Memorial Day demonstration. And Robert has ridden with me all these years. And the first thing we do when we get to Washington is go to Walter Reed. And I've been to Walter Reed and Balboa to visit the troops. And my message to these Vietnam veterans, just because they may not hear these things, they may not know or understand. A lot of them have not been able to participate in all the events and all the other things that I have. I've been very fortunate in that way. But they may not have heard the words that I have when I visit these amazing heroes. And I always tell the story of growing up. My dad was a World War II veteran. And what he always told me, whenever I started to complain, he always pointed, he had this framed on the wall, and it said, "I cried because I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet." And the first time I went to Walter Reed with Robert, and we went into the hospital, into the ward, where these American heroes learning how to live with prosthetics, these heroes who have lost limbs, whether they've lost their arms and legs and whatever the maladies they've suffered for us. And I looked at that and I think all the time back to what my dad used to tell me. And I say, "Dad," who I know is listening to me, he's up in heaven and he's still there. And I say, "The man who had no feet." And I've never been so inspired. Never been so inspired. Because to a man and woman, virtually every one of these heroes, the first thing they want to do, and they let us know, and they let everybody, they want to get back to their unit. They want to get back in the fight. They want to complete their job. They want to get it done. They want to go back to this war. Every one of them. They're amazing. Here's Robert Patrick and T-1000, wow, and whatever the other celebrities are in the room. Then they see me, and then wearing my Rolling Thunder vest and my Vietnam service stuff. And they say, "Why, you're a Vietnam vet. Thank you." I go, "Well, you know," and I go, "No, I thank you." And they're like, "No, thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for what you did. Thank you for setting the example, for fighting the fight, the way you guys were treated back here." And they understand how important it has been for us to make sure that no soldier, airman, marine, anyone who fights for this country is ever going to be treated the way we were, and they appreciate that. And I want to give that message to everyone that fought in Vietnam, because what's important to know is that we have inspired. We've inspired this generation of the great heroes, great warriors. And if we've inspired this generation, together with this generation, we'll inspire the next generation. And this is so important. It means so much to me that as I'm ready to leave this earth, as this generation is, just as we watch the World War II generation as they're moving on, and how much they inspired us. And today, everywhere you go, people just revere that World War II veteran. It's inspirational. And it's so important to be inspirational. And that we have left this mark on the American warfighters today. It's gratifying and reassuring to know that we've accomplished. That's a big deal. So that's been my message. And I really want to thank Darrell Issa. It's so important what he's done in doing this. He stands there when, you know, we're finished with the introductions. And the local mayor speaks and a local whatever, and then they brought me up to say this, and then Darrell stands there. And the veterans in the room, there's hundreds of them, they stand online, they go through like a little reception, and their name is called because they've signed up. Their name is called and where they served, their unit, and Darrell pins this veteran's pin on their lapel, each and every one of them individually, and then takes a picture with each and every one of them. It's really very special and appreciated by everyone. And I just can't thank Darrell enough. So I wanted to get this podcast in. It's kind of cool now that I have Ed Hill and Podstars as a production company. I know that they can put this in sequence and make it happen and edit it in a way that when you're listening to it, it's not just my going all over the map and all over the place, that they've made this sound like I know what I'm talking about. So I'm leaving tomorrow. There is an event in El Cajon, and if they ask me, I'll go there. But I want to get on the road. One of the reasons why I want to get out of here early tomorrow, it's hot. But you're riding. Man, I love riding. And people go, you ride through the rain? My God, you know, you ride through the rain. You ride through the conditions. I think of all the conditions that I've ridden through and I ride through on a regular bit, the heat. When it gets up over 90, 95, and leaving San Diego, there's two ways to go. You can take the 8 towards Arizona. You're not going to get away from the heat. And when I take the 15 up towards Vegas and into Utah, it's the same. It might be a little worse. It might be a little longer. Nah, it's about the same 400, 500 miles of heat. And tomorrow, I mean, we've been in a heat wave. Today, it's so much easier to get out there. You just look at your iPhone, you look at the weather, and you can see the whole week is right there in front of you. And this whole week is projected to be up in the hundreds. I'll ride up north, I'll get up on the 15, and you get through, and then you get to Baker. It's 111 to 115 degrees in Baker. Oh, my God. And you get to Vegas, it's about 100 and a little over, maybe 102, 104. I think it'll be 99 tomorrow afternoon. That's hot. And it's hard riding in that kind of heat. I've got two helmets. I got my full-face helmet, which I wear that protection from the sun, but I just got a new helmet. It was sent to me by my friend Chris McGee, and he said, Mike, check this out. It's a Kirsch helmet. Made in America, and Chris goes through the whole thing because he's so excited about it. Made in America, all the components are made in America. The Kirsch Helmet Company is an American company, and the owner, the CEO, is a veteran, and he's from the Bronx. That's all cool stuff. But the helmet is a little different. So he drops the helmet off with me about a week ago, and I go, wow, this thing weighs about 5 pounds, man. He says, when you wear it, I'm telling you, it's not going to be that heavy. You're going to be amazed. It's got this liner. It's not the normal cushy liner. It retains the coolness. Put it in the fridge before you leave. You get up, and you can take the liner in and out. You can put it in the refrigerator. You can put it in cold water. You can do whatever you want. And then you put it on, and it stays cool for hours. And so I'm going to be wearing this helmet because I've been riding with it for the last couple of weeks. And it's true. You put it on, boy, you pick it up. It's like, whoa. And you put it on your head, and you start riding. You don't even feel it. I don't know anything about the science behind it, all the technology and everything. I just know that I put that on my head and it feels like it's as light as my beanie helmet, which is as light as it can get. But I wear the full face because I want to be protected from this devastating sun, not just the heat, but it keeps the sun off my face, and that's important. So I'm carrying the full face. I'm wearing the Kirsch, and I'm going to give it a real shot on this ride. So it's so important. And the other thing that's important, I want to remind everybody, is the MRF, the Motorcycle Riders Foundation. Because I get my updates from them. I read about what's going on. They keep me up to date on all the legislation as it pertains to all of us on two wheels. It's pretty cool, and I'm reading up on that. What's going on in Washington is, it's pretty discouraging. I got to say that. But at the same time, everybody's saying how Congress is so terrible and we're giving them bad marks, and we are. That's not changed. That's always been the case because at least half of Congress is horrible. Yeah, the half that disagrees with our half. I always say there's two parties in America. One's evil and one's stupid. Well, I'm stuck on stupid. That's just the way it is. But we are a divided country because we do have two major parties. Now, I know, don't get all offended if you're a libertarian or a Green Party person or one of this. Yeah, you're fringe, baby. You're just fringe. And when it comes down to electing who represents us, I'm not saying that the fringe doesn't make a difference, because that's how Bill Clinton got elected, because there was a fringe candidate for president and George W. Bush didn't get reelected. Because there was a candidate that took 19-20% of the vote, most of that, probably 17 out of the 19, would have been for George Bush. And it went to Clinton. So sometimes the libertarian or the unintended consequences, the law of unintended consequences, it's always there. But for the most part, we have these two parties. And the more we disagree, in today's world, I lived through the 60s, and that divide was deep. It was deep. And I look around today, and I say, I'm not sure how much deeper it is. But the other side, you know, in the 60s, we argued about policy. There were a lot of things that we argued. The war was certainly a major thing. The war was huge. And I think that argument brought in the Democrats to power also. And the media plays a huge role in how Americans vote. They play a huge role. And so that's where we were. In today's political environment, it's about communism. It's about, you know, look at the popularity of Bernie Sanders. You know, he calls himself a socialist. Socialism is a starter kit for communism. It's just a stepping stone for communism. And when you talk to some of these people, they're just down and out Marxists. BLM, the Black Lives Matter, it's something to do with black lives. It's about Marxism. That's what it is. And that's the other side. So are we going to say Congress is competent? No. And then the other side looks at us. They look at the Jim Jordans and the Meadows and the all those on our side, and they go, oh, they're terrible, they're horrible, they're right-wing extremists, they're all about the white supremacists. And so there's a big divide. And is it bigger than it ever was? I don't know. But it's big, and it's important, and it's time for us to focus on what's out in front of us today. I always say, aside from the fact there's two parties, evil and stupid, I'm telling you now, because we've seen what's going on. We've seen how elections have been just twisted and rigged. And so we know, because we don't have the media on our side. We don't have Hollywood on our side. All these image makers, okay, are on the side of the left. They've always been that way. And so we need two votes to every one of theirs. And I keep on reminding you of that, how important it is for us to be motivated. And look at what's going on with Governor Cuomo. If you saw the news today, they came out with this report that all these things that have been talked about for months and months about Cuomo, about how many people were killed in these old age homes and these places where the older people have gone because he brought COVID back. 15,000 or more were killed. And then he writes a book and he gets $5 million because he was the America's governor during the COVID. So it's crazy to think of that. But today they came out and a devastating report on how he sexually harassed all these women and what he did and how vindictive he was and all these things. How can he possibly survive this? And let's hope that this left, who never takes on their own, as bad as it gets, and look how bad it got. I see today when they talk of Cuomo comes out and says this is a political hit job. That's all it is. What was it when they had the Mueller report? What was that all about? 2 years of a political hit job against President Trump. So if Cuomo's going to invoke that as his defense, where was he and all the other people who want to call this a political hit job when a real political hit job against President Trump went on for 2 years at the cost of millions, $30, $40 million, 18, 20 lawyers full time, along with putting this Mueller report through 2 years to come up with nothing. But what they came up with against Andrew Cuomo is a lot more than nothing, baby. This is huge. A huge amount of sexual harassment evidence by the Democrat Attorney General of New York. So let's see where this goes, because we know where it needs to go. And it needs to go there, not just for the opposition, but even more so for the Democrats. They need to demonstrate that when they see this kind of criminal behavior, and it's criminal behavior, there's no question. If you can find the press conference from the Attorney General of New York, there's no question. This is criminal behavior without a doubt. And let's hope that the Democrats in America, if that was the Republic, look what we did to Nixon. Well, they need to face the facts and do what they have to do to make sure that Andrew Cuomo, I always want to say Mario Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo gets what he deserves and doesn't spend another day in Albany as the governor of New York. Going on and continuing to talk about going to Sturgis and getting out there on the road, I got to tell you, I love riding motorcycles. And this is the time, this is the year that it's going to be huge. There's going to be tons of people in Sturgis. The cabin fever of being forced to stay home during COVID, not being able to go anyplace and be with big crowds and all that. There's a refuge in America called the state of South Dakota. And the governor of South, you talk about great governors. Yeah, we've had bad governors and we got great governors. We have Gavin Newsom, who's being recalled. And I think he will be recalled. I think that there are plenty of Democrats, there has to be, who are fed up and know that he's been incompetent, as a matter of fact, dangerous and damaging to the state of California. But again, Democrats outnumber Republicans in California by 2-1. That's just the way it is. So we're going to see how that goes. But as we ride into South Dakota, that's a state that has not just survived this whole COVID experience, whatever you want to call it. They've thrived. They've done better. Their numbers are better. Their employment numbers are better. The GDP, the gross domestic product of South Dakota, has been phenomenal throughout this whole thing. Could have been the whole country. You know, Florida, Governor DeSantis has been terrific. We see what's going on in Texas. And Texas has been so hurt by the border crisis. And yet, they're doing so much better than so many other places because the state's been pretty open, except for Austin, of course, the capital. They always said, keep Austin weird. Austin is weird, but it's still in Texas, and the governor there has been very strong about keeping the state open as much as possible. And go to South Dakota, and I think of the whole country, I don't think there's any place that's been more open and less negatively affected by this whole COVID pandemic. So I'm thrilled to get there. I'm thrilled to be around all the bikers I love riding with and hanging out with and being a part of this whole lifestyle and this movement. It's something that, like I said, I'm excited about. So I want to get on the road. Yes, I'm concerned about the heat. And by the way, I hope this Kirsch helmet does what they say it can do. It's certainly pretty cool. I've never ridden with this kind of equipment before. But the one thing I have ridden with before is the cool vest that I get from Harley Davidson. Because if you put this vest on, and you could find it at any Harley dealer should have it, especially this time of the year. I can't imagine they don't. But I have mine. And when you wet it with cold water, it will stay cold. Now, will it stay cold for the hours that the Kirsch helmet does? No. But you can get on the road, get out there for 45 minutes to an hour, and this vest will keep you cool. Now, I ride with a bottle of water on my handlebars. For drinking, yes, but I also keep it on there so I can just reapply it. I just toss it on myself on this cool vest. And until the water gets so hot, just from sitting there, you get it out of the, you stop for gas, you pick up a bottle of water, you put it on there, it's cold. It'll be cold for 20 minutes, half an hour, but it'll stay that way long enough so it'll get you to the next stop. You got to stop a lot. I'm telling you, if you're out there, if you're going to Sturgis, if you haven't done it before, get yourself one of these vests, put it on, ride with water. Keep yourself hydrated. It's very important. But also keep your body cool. Make sure it's cool. And make sure when you're starting to feel hot, you stop. If you have to stop every 30 minutes, stop every 30 minutes. Whatever it takes. You should be able to get 30 minutes down the road no matter what the heat. But whatever it is, make sure that you're looking for that place to stop. Most places in America, you could do that. There are some places. When I get past St. George, I'll go past Cedar City, that's probably about 40 or 50 miles. That's 35, 40 minutes. You're doing 80 miles an hour. And then you go to Beaver, that's another 40 minutes. And then you get on to 70. You've got about 35, 40 miles till you get to Ridgefield. Then you pass Salina. And then as you keep going, it's about 110 miles to Green River. So get ready. So if the weather is so hot that you can't take it, then you'll know it. Make sure you're cognizant of these things. As you travel, take a look at the weather. Find out what it's like for the next 100 miles. Because 100 miles in 100-degree heat, 90-degree heat, it's a long ways. So if you got to take an extra water, take an extra water. If you got to throw some ice in your tour pack, in your side bags, whatever, do what you need to do. But make sure that you are protected against this heat. It's devastating. So I'm just giving you the route I take. My preferred route is going up that 70. But I know that I can get to Ridgefield and I can get to Salina. Once I pass Salina, Utah, I got 110 miles to Green River. And Green River, the Grand Junction, that's another 100 plus miles. So if you know that, after that, which pretty much rest areas every 20 or 30 miles. When you're on the 70 going through the mountains, some places, I don't know, between Aspen, Vail, and all that. So it's a little longer than others, but it's also pretty cool up there. So it should be in the high 70s, low 80s. I think the heat that you're going to get from wherever I am, right through St. George and right up until you pass Cedar City, is pretty intense. Now, if I have to go straight up, and a lot of people from Southern California, when you get to the 70 on the 15, you got a choice. You can go east on the 70, or you go straight up on the 15th, and then you're going to hit the 80, the Park City, Utah. The 80 can be hot, but again, once you get up there, you're usually okay all the way on the 80 all the way to Cheyenne. So my fellow biker, as we're all headed that way, and by the way, there's tons of things going on because this is going to be a huge year in Sturgis. So if you haven't gotten your tickets for the Legends Ride or the Good Ride or wherever you're, you know, planning on going and whoever you're planning on being with, when you get there, if you haven't got it yet, when you get there, figure out what's going on and jump in. I am going to be staying with my friend, Kareem. Yep, Kareem owns the Rushmore Hotel, has for many years. I've been staying with him that many years. I call him America's finest host. He's the best host. There's a lot of places that we stay around the country, and I like traveling as much as I do. It's nice to be able to go to places that are friendly. I don't know any place that treats its guests, all of its guests. It doesn't have to be someone who's been there for 25 years. He treats everyone that's there just the same. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to it. Yeah, I've got options. I could stay in a lot of places, and it's 35 miles to the Buffalo Chip, and I'll be spending a lot of time at the Chip. Another great place, a great venue. It's worth the trip to me. And then it's another 15, 20 miles into Deadwood. And if you haven't, a lot of people go to Sturgis maybe once in a lifetime or once every so many years. And this is a first time for a lot of folks. So it's your first time? Don't miss out on Deadwood. Great town, so much going on. There's a lot of gambling, and that's cool. But there's a lot of history. There's a lot of other things. It's cool. It's hospitable. It's got great places to eat. And, of course, Sturgis itself is wild and woolly, especially during this time of the year. And there's so much to do. There's just lots and lots of stuff going on. The Pappy Hole Campgrounds, that's where the Full Throttle is. And so the Full Throttle that burnt down years ago is kind of sort of relocated at Pappy Hole. Pappy Hole, as you go out, you go down Lizelle Street, and you get down the end, you pass Fort Meade, and you come to the junction where you go straight to the Buffalo Chip, or you can make a left turn and go 7 miles to Pappy Hole. So those are my favorite places and places to be. If you go past Pappy Hole, you can get to Sugar Bear's. Sugar Bear, the most amazing bike builder of my time. And if you haven't seen or you don't know about a Sugar Bear front end on a motorcycle, if you see these big long front ends where the wheel is like inverted, it's amazing. And they handled so well, the engineering's amazing. So just past Pappy Hole, when you go that way, maybe another, I don't know, 5 miles, and you'll see Sugar Bear's Chopper Museum on the right. Check it out. Another really cool, worthwhile thing. And you want to keep on going. You go to Spearfish. There's so many cool places up there in that part of the world. So that's about it for this podcast. I don't want to get too political. There's so much going on. The border crisis and the rest of it. I'd like to see some of this stuff put on hold while I'm riding, while I'm on the road. You know, this is my, you want to call it vacation time, it is. Petrina's bike is going to be there, and she's coming in on Sunday. So we love riding the Black Hills. We love going up Needles Parkway. We have friends that are going to be there, some of them, again, for the first time. Travis, who bought my Sarah Palin bike, is riding, and it's his first time. I'm hoping to meet up and ride with him out of Vegas. There's other friends that, you know, we're going to see up there and spend some time with and ride the beautiful Black Hills, go to Custer, go to Crazy Horse Monument. Pretty inspirational place. I like it. Like I tell everybody, Che Guevara, that's what when I think of Crazy Horse himself, he's like the Che Guevara of the Indian Wars. Yeah, but it's a little different. When they built Mount Rushmore, its chief standing bear said, hey, we have heroes too. And we want the white man to know that we have heroes too. And that's why he got the beginning. He got the Crazy Horse Monument to start in the 40s. And when you go to Crazy Horse, go in and watch the film. You go up, you park the bikes, and you go in. They have a beautiful area. There's a lot of learning about the Indian lifestyle, and it's museums. It's everything up there. And there's a film that they show all throughout the day. So you go in, you watch it. It's about 20 minutes. And then wait for your turn, and you'll get the chance to go into the theater. Don't miss it. If you go to Crazy Horse, it is such an inspirational film when we see how amazingly difficult it was to begin the process of carving out this mountain that's been going on since then. And without $1 from the government, now one government dollar to get this done, and they've done it. And you got to watch how they've done it, how they brought the generator out and carried it up. They climb the mountain, and he gets to the top, and he's starting to blast and do what he does, and the generator dies. He's got to go all the way down, restart the generator, climb all the way up. I mean, we take so much for granted today. When you go to that part of the world, it's a beautiful place to be. It's also a great opportunity to appreciate what we have today. And your decision, I know everybody's so popular today to say how the Native Americans were mistreated or this or that. I've got my own opinions. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. But when I think about Native Americans, the Indians and the Indian tribes, I can only relate it to my personal experience. As a paratrooper, the American Indians were courageous and wonderful. There's a reason why they say when you jump out of the airplane, you yell, Geronimo. There's a reason. What's interesting, and I think about this a lot, I see how people change the name of baseball teams and football teams. And in my mind, the Cleveland Indians or the Washington Redskins or the Braves were named after these amazing people because of an appreciation for these people. I always thought it was a gesture of, hey, you know what? We defeated the American Indians during those wars in the 1800s. Yeah, we did. But aside from the fact that whatever they did, they murdered us, they killed us. The pilgrims, they try to come across the country and settle. But we fought people that fought back heroically. And to me, I grew up, and in the military especially, fought with great Americans. And those Native Americans were amongst the greatest and the bravest. And I love being with them. And I love going to the Black Hills and appreciating their history. I just got to tell you, I think of them as some of the most heroic and patriotic Americans because they are. So whatever the history was, however you want to deem it, wrong or right, it was a war. And we won the war. We won the West. It wasn't an easy fight. And we fought noble warriors. And maybe I don't like a lot of the things they did, a lot of the tactics they used. But even on the Trail of Tears, those tribes took their slaves with them. So there's right and wrong on both sides. What I want to look at is where we are today as one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. And that's how I want to see America. And wherever we came from, here we are. We all are Americans. We need to depend on each other and appreciate each other. However we got here, here we are. And we are facing adversaries today that we need to be together if we're going to survive this. And it's never, you know, everybody, peace. Yeah, I'd like a little peace. Let's appreciate the peace that we have from time to time. But we're only going to have that peace as long as we're strong enough and committed enough to keep that peace. And that means being together as one nation, putting aside this big divide. Yeah, we can argue who was right and who was wrong. We can argue about policy. We can argue about, you know, a lot of things. Even the communism thing. We're going to have to defeat it to survive. That I can tell you that. But while we have our freedom. We have our dignity as individuals. We do. But we're going to lose it if we don't embrace each other, each and every one of us, whatever color, creed, whether we're Native Americans whose family was here thousands of years before the pilgrims arrived, and certainly before the pioneers, or whether your ancestors just arrived on a boat from Cuba, or from wherever, or like mine, from Russia, you know, wherever. We're here. We're American. This is a melting pot. We get here and we all become the same. It's like just we're American. We're all American. We need to appreciate that a lot more than we do. That's one of the reasons I love riding in the Black Hills. I love riding with every tribe, every motorcycle group, club, organization that rides up from around the country and comes together. And we all celebrate together. We go to the Buffalo Chip and we watch guys like Kid Rock. And we're there. We're celebrating all of us. We don't question who's what and who. And is this a black club? Is this a white club? Is this a outlaw club? Is this a Christian club? Is this... No. We get up there and we ride together. We respect each other. And yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a whatever here or there. It happens. But overall, we all know that we want to retain that moment in time every year that we all go to Sturgis and celebrate and watch the races and the hill climbs and get together. We camp out and we ride to different events and we celebrate a lot of different things. And we enjoy the roads and the trails and the Black Hills and the different highways and different towns, Belle Fourche, and riding into Wyoming. And we enjoy that as one, as a biker nation. And that should be an example that we can set for the rest of the country. And I just hope that the country is watching and appreciating. Don't label bikers as some kind of white supremacists. Don't label bikers as a bunch of criminals and gangs. And we're motorcycle clubs. A whole bunch of different motorcycle clubs. What we have in common is the motorcycle. For most of us, it's the Harley Davidson motorcycle. But it's certainly the American motorcycle. But anybody else that wants to come in on two wheels, they're welcome. They can come in. Yeah, we may tease. We may kid each other. We may whatever. But we're all bikers. We're all on two wheels. We're all here for each other. So just understand that however we got here, wherever we rode here from, wherever we come from and how we get here, when we're here, we're going to party, man. We're going to have a good time. We're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate who we are and what we are and what we do. We're going to celebrate being American. We're going to celebrate our individual heritages. We're going to celebrate our individual clubs and the gathering of that club along with all these other clubs. We're going to celebrate going for the rides through the hills and the mountains and all these wonderful places. And we're going to be welcomed there. Welcomed there by everyone who lives there, who's been there for a long time, or has been there basically forever. We're welcomed by the American Indians. Nobody resents us. I don't go to Rushmore. And yeah, there's always going to be somebody that's going to protest something. That's America. So we have a First Amendment. People have the right to speak their minds and say what they think. That doesn't mean you have the right to destroy anything or anybody. You got the right to say what you think and express yourself. And people are going to express things that you don't like. So what? Just applaud and appreciate them. Good, you said it. That's good. I don't agree. We're going to move on. That's America. That's what I love about this country. We can disagree and we can agree to disagree. But let's not be disagreeable. Let's all be one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. And if everybody in America listened to Roll Right Radio, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Roll Right Radio, rolling right up there through the heat. Oh my God, I'm dreading it. But there we go. Through the heat, on to Sturgis, and hopefully we'll be broadcasting from Sturgis, from the Buffalo Chip, next week. I'm New York Mike. Thanks for being there. Thanks for subscribing and telling your friends. And that's it. I'll see you when I see you. As Chuck Zito says, I'll see you when I'm looking at you. See you in Sturgis. Have a great ride. See you there.